small convenience store. And I counted just before deal with the transit situation. Wonder if I can ask for a motion of council just to add to our agenda the long-term disability letter of agreement that was set.
So moved. Okay,
thank you. Thank you. On a question and all in favor? Can I get a motion to approve that letter of agreement that was voted on? Thank you. Thank you, Councilor Perrin. Seconded by Councilor Mackley. On a question and all in favor? Thank you. I scared that. First, I want to just thank very much the members of the Transit Commission, the board, and also members of the management for meeting with us tonight, this afternoon. And we scheduled a couple of hours, and I wanted to just outline our mission and our goal and the tone and tenor in which we want to have the conversation this afternoon. This council very much believes in collaboration and very much believes in making sure that we move forward in a constructive way. And this past Monday, we all on this council learned about a significant problem facing our Transit Commission. And while the Transit Commission is a separate legal entity, while it has a separate board, separate management, while it's completely arm's length from the city, it impacts city taxpayers at a much larger level because your funding for the Transit Commission, the funding to provide this service comes from city taxpayers from the city of St. John. And so this council, and I think I'm speaking on behalf of everyone on this council, really believes in taking ownership of situations and problems right away. We believe that we're all accountable for the dollars that are spent for taxpayers in this community. And we believe that that accountability rests not only certainly on myself and the members of this council, but it also rests on our boards and commissions, the memberships of which we appoint, and really in terms of the governance structure, the only group that we can look to for answers and the only group we can really question with authenticity and legitimacy is the Transit Commission Board. It's the board's role in terms of the governance structure to hold management of Transit Commission to account and to make decisions. But certainly from this council's perspective, our role is in respect of the board. And so we're very grateful for the time that the members of the board spend on this commission, spend on trying to move forward the city. And so I want to thank you for the time and the energy and the effort. That doesn't mean that we don't from time to time have tough questions that have to be asked about how the resources have been spent. And so we do have concerns, certainly as a council, about what we learned this past Monday as it relates to what we understand to be a shortfall in your budget or a budget deficit somewhere between $400,000 and $800,000, what we understand. And some of the details that we hope to flesh out. But I want to very much emphasize that the spirit in which we're coming to this meeting today is one of collaboration, it's one of joint respect for the work you do, but that doesn't mean that we aren't responsible to the taxpayers of this community, to the public that have entrusted us with their dollars, and doesn't mean that we're not interested in really understanding not only how this could come about, but what are the solutions going forward that you've already identified and that you're thinking about, and how do we make sure that together that we solve this? Together, as council, as commission, as management, how do we do this together and collaboratively to take a situation that ultimately impacts the citizens and move forward together? So that's the spirit in which we're coming today. I do understand that that perhaps the Transit Commission, just by way of the overhead slide that's up, may have a presentation that the commission would like for council to receive, and certainly invite the Transit Commission or its appointee to provide the presentation if that's what the commission wishes to do. And then I know sort of myself and members of the council like we have questions, constructive questions on how we can come together deal with this situation, this problem, and so we certainly open up the Transit Commission to indicate how they'd like to proceed either in terms of a presentation or making either a member of the commission board available for questions.
Thank you, Worship. Donna Reardon, and I am the chairman of Transit, and I would like to introduce our guest this evening. I have Frank and Carrie with me, who's the general manager of the Transit. I have Charles Freak, who is the manager of transportation over there. I have board members Don Smith here and board member John Campbell here, and requests from all the other board members who are either away or couldn't get it with the weather. So I'll pass it over to you, I guess, Frank, to get started.
Your Worship, the Councillors, first of all, I apologize for you not knowing about this. I guess that was my oversight, not checking to make sure you were aware of these sorts of things, but I had assumed you were. We have a slide presentation here, about seven or eight slides, just to give you a little background on this as we see it. The first slide is just to give you an idea of what's been going on since 2010. And we started off with service hours, because they are very reflective of what our costs are. And back in 2010, we had 178,000 service hours. The cost of the city was $4,911,000, our expenses being $10 million, and our revenue being around $5 million. And the subsidy that was granted that year booked after that. In 2011, we had dropped the service hours to 112,000. We expected some revenue drop, but in fact, we had a slight increase in revenue. The expenses were at $10,400. The subsidy was $4,317,000, and the balance was paid by reducing the equity of St. John Transit by $892,000. So the cost of the city that year was $5,209,000, but only $4.3 million came out of the funding from the city. In 2012, there was a significant drop in service hours from 112,000 down to 96,000. It reduced the cost of the city to $4,567,000. And that was looked after by a subsidy of $4,155,000 and an equity reduction of $445,000. In 2013, we did start to reintroduce some service, particularly evening service in the priority neighborhoods. That happened around May of that year. Service hours climbed to 100,314, and in 2014 it was 102,617. That was a full year of the evening services being reintroduced. The revenue, however, has continued to drop down to $4,691,000, and this year we're looking at an expectation of $4,688,000. And the expenses have gone accordingly, and you'll see the cost of the city has risen this year to $5.7 million. Whereas it had been fairly consistent up until this time. And the funding source, as I say, we've indicated below. And the problem this year, of course, is that the equity has been reduced to $284,000. And I don't know what the city would decide to take out of equity. But if they took it all, which is unlikely, there would be a shortfall of $344,000. Just for your information, the cost per hour of the service over those years is also shown there at it's going from $85 up to $102, and the funding per hour has gone from $41.83 up to $56.39, is what we expected would be this year. Oh, can't seem to change slides here. There we go. This is the overage prediction, what has happened. We had revenue budgeted at $5,138,000. Looks like it's coming in, as shown on the last slide, at $4,688,000. We expect expenses to be basically on budget. There will be one situation that in the statements you folks receive, you'll see $100,000 more in revenue and $100,000 more in expenses, just on the basis that we've had an accident last year that we'll be getting to put a $100,000 settlement on. Although what we tend to look at it as reduction of expenses, because all the costs were borne by the maintenance department, it will be taken into revenue. But in terms of our operation, we see the shortfall being entirely in the revenue end. The ridership assumptions, where we went astray, we had a 7% increase in service hours from 2012 by introducing the evening service. And we thought that would lead to a 5% increase in passengers, which has been typical of service increases in the past. It would generate $220,000. And we had hoped that we had made a sense that there was an improving economy and that would generate an additional $100,000 in revenue. One thing that was unforeseen to us that we did not quite deal with in January 2014, and it was announced that there was a further $100,000 reduction in our subsidy, so the above impacts the total revenue budget by about $420,000. We've just given you some statistical comparisons for you to look at with regards to St. John and compared to other municipalities in Canada. I guess it's really to assure council that what they're spending on transit is certainly not inappropriate. And I'll make a few comments on some of the costs. In St. John, our RC ratio is at 46%. That has declined from 56% back in 2009 when we were at a fairly high level of service. Our passengers are at 2,275,000, service hours 102, the average fare is $1.93, the operating subsidy will be, this is 2013, which was 5,216. In Atlantic Canada, and these are difficult numbers to use because they're skewed very much by Halifax, which is a very large system, and the subsidy level I think is about $49 million down there. But just to give you some of the main one there to look at, I think, in Atlantic Canada is the RC ratio of 38%. Probably one of the more important statistics would be in cities between 50 and 150,000. We've given you an average. There's 31 cities in that group, and that would include the three cities in the Brunswick. It's probably important to note that St. John Transit is a fully absorbed service where some of them are city departments and they don't bear all their expenses because, for example, in some cities the property tax wouldn't show on the transit statements because, well, that's just in New Brunswick. The only problem is that pays property tax in transit is in New Brunswick. But it's really driven, though, by cities that are very similar to us. So there's a recovery ratio of 36%. They're carrying 74 million passengers on those 31 systems, which is an average of 2,414, slightly above us. They're putting in an average of 98,000 service hours, which is, again, is just slightly under us. The average fare is $1.58, which we're above at $1.93. And the operating subsidy on average is $6,331,000. Just a comment on that. Most of the systems we've checked with do not fund the handing bus service out of their transit budget. We, in fact, do, to a tune of about $360,000 a year. And the other situation is the property taxes. Other than in New Brunswick, nowhere else in Canada is their property tax paid, which is another $300,000. So in some ways, that comparison would be, if they had the same costs as we had, they'd be averaging about $7 million compared to our $5 million. This is just some other subsidy cost information for you. The subsidy cost per passenger in St. John is $229, per capita $467, per service hour $5,139. Again, these are 2013 statistics. Atlantic Canada, it's $269, per capita $114.91. Again, this is skewed very much by Halifax. And the per service hour is $6,802. The 50,000 to 150,000 population group, the 31 cities that I mentioned, is the subsidy per passenger average is $264, per capita $58.25, and the per service hour cost is $64.03. In Canada, it's $1.16, per capita is $106.94, and $49.61. Once again, I would point out that these numbers are extremely skewed by the six largest systems in Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, Vancouver, and Calgary and Edmonton, who carry about 80% of the passengers in the country. Some of the things we're doing when we do our service design considerations, in which we talked to council about back in May, and I'll talk about them later, but we look at things like area coverage. We're trying to maximize the coverage area. We try to maximize ridership by focusing on main lines. We try to minimize the connections by providing as much direct service as we can. For example, the main line, we hope to pick up as many people as possible who don't have to change buses. Ease of connections, wait time, which is very much connected to how frequent your main lines are. And the social needs is evening service. Evening service is not well used, but it's very critical to the working people that work at minimum wage jobs, because often the time when they go home is in the evening. They don't tend to work 9 to 5. The current service hours, just for your information, of the 102, there's 10,400 of them, or 10% of it is on the comics. And the suburban area of the city is 5450. And the primary development area is defined in the new PDA documents, is 86,000. So 94% of the service that we're doing in city is in the primary development area. So the suburban, which would be the Loch Lomond service, the Redhead service, the Bartnott service, those services really only make up 5.3% of our service hours. Because the trips are not particularly frequent there. One of the options we showed the council in May was to reduce the area coverage of service to the primary development areas. That would also include reducing the evening service on the connecting roads, but increasing frequencies, particularly on main lines, but changing from 3 main lines to 2 main lines. It would provide a true frequency to connect with the new single main line. That would reduce the service hours down to 90,000 from the current 102. And when we did that, we were doing it in terms of so that the cost would not go over what they were in 2013. One of the real problems is estimating riderships, particularly in cuts and particularly in a time of tough economic conditions. And we're using a ridership prediction of 2,150,000, which is down from our current 2,275,000. However, we might be very disappointed in that, and we might have significantly further reductions in ridership. We just won't know until we do it. But that was for the budgets for 2015 and 2016, not to exceed the 2014 requirements. We get some questions sometimes about being top-heavy, etc. So this is our organization chart. It's down from 105 people back in the 2009 era. There's myself and administration. There's myself and two people, the two in the middle. We have a transportation manager, and we have a plant and maintenance manager. And those are the people that report to him, and the people that report to the transportation manager. So most of our costs are related directly to the service, either with full-time operators or part-time operators, mechanics, body shop, fleet servicing, etc. We really have cut down. At one time, when I first went with St. John Transit, we had 7 people, or 6 people, I guess, in administration. We're down to 3. When I look at services our size, at their organization charts, typically it's anywhere from 8 to 12 for an operation of our size for the administration. So I think that we're just showing that where we're at now is that any time we want to cut costs, we have to go to service. There's nothing left, really. And that's it. That's my presentation. I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGarry. Councilor.
Well, thank you, Your Worship. Mr. McGarry, can you put back your first slide for me? Is that possible, please?
Sure it is, yeah. I may not be capable, but yes.
All right. Thank you. This slide, what I'm reading, correct me if I'm wrong, is that we've been calling this deficit this year a deficit above and beyond the deficit that in our budgets we agreed to finance, the city, that is.
That's a good, is it this slide here?
Yeah, but no, just back one for me, please, sir. Yeah, so what I'm looking at, your funding source, okay, subsidy in the first line, okay, 4911, zero equity. What I'd like to know is that where did you have a deficit over and above what was agreed to in those budgets each and every year?
There was a deficit budgeted for, too.
I realize that, sir.
And we did, yes, in other years. The budget that was there, the deficit was budgeted for was about $175,000.
All right. So in 2011, there was an equity reduction of almost $900,000. Does that mean that that 2011 budget year was $900,000 more of a deficit than we had anticipated?
No, it would be about $700 more. Or, you know, it would be the $892 plus less than $175 that was anticipated to be a deficit.
All right. And the $175, you're getting that from where?
From equity.
And the equity is the old building,
yes. It was equity. And obviously, it made no sense for Transit to be carrying $1 million in equity or something. So it rather than funded from, on a subsidy basis, it was funded from to reduce the equity.
All right. Well, that makes sense. But my problem is that it seems that for quite some time, you've submitted the budget to the City of St. John, and you've not made that budget for as far as I can see here.
What's happened is that we've submitted a budget that's been reduced, but there was no appetite to reduce the service. Now, we did reduce the service. We did some in the 2010 to 2011. There was a reduction of 5,000 service hours, but there was a big reduction taken the following year. That's been the problem, is we're trying to put out too much service for. I mean, if you look at the cost of the city, it has been reasonably consistent. Because we've got
the funding per hour, sir, has gone up 35% in those 5 years.
Yes, it has. Yeah, no, there's no question. And one of the things that will happen is your ridership drops. The funding per hour will go up. And you know, we like the impact of the service cuts. From 2011 to 2012, some of it was felt in 2012, and we really started to feel it in 2013. We hoped in 2013, with the introduction of some service hours back, that it would finally have plateaued and start to grow again. Frankly, the ability to predict ridership has become very, very difficult when we've gone through reductions. That's not something we've done before. And I have been advised that over the years, by transit managers, that once you start service reductions, starting to create harm, because what happens is that as you drop the cost and the service levels, the ridership also drops. So if you're at back in those days at a 56% recovery, and you want to save a dollar in a subsidy level, you really have to cut $2 in expenses because you're going to lose the revenue that dollar was producing. And it's been, we've been spiraling down. There's no question of the ridership. It seems to have plateaued, but we thought it did last year. Our experience in the past when we used to hit fare increases, we would see a plateauing of actually a slight drop, usually about 0.3 with elasticity in our ridership, but then it would come back up and you would get full benefits of the fare increase. But we've never gone through much experience with reduction in service hours, and it's made it very difficult. And I think it's been compounded also by the fact that economic conditions have been very different
in
the past 50 years.
Mr. Guy, I don't doubt that at all. I sincerely don't. My problem is, sir, that regardless, first of all, if you set a budget, I just want you to make the budget. And I'm not seeing that here. I'm not seeing it this year. And whether we should have known, whether we shouldn't have known, it comes in November and smacks us right in the side of the head, and we're going to have to come up with that money. It's got to come someplace. I mean, like Dad used to tell us, right, with the growing trees. All I'd like to see, sir, is that whatever service you decide that you should provide when you give the budget to us, okay, is that budget be, helped. I want to see you make the budget, and I'm not seeing that here.
And I guess the problem is that we should not be trying to budget to a service. We should be trying to provide a service to a budget.
And, sir, you would know one heck of a lot more about busing than I would. That's done, though, Mr. Mayor, I think that all, from my point of view, I want done is that we hold that budget. Well, however it's designed, sir, I just want it to be held. That we can't come in and, you know, what this tells me is that you haven't made budget, and the reason we haven't seen a big shortfall is that we used the money from that building, okay? Which probably was the right thing to do. But what I focus on is that the budget just hasn't been made. And so I'm never going to get in the way of transit or your commission survey to try to design a bus route. But I am going to tell you that the budgets have to be held.
Well, one of the things that we proposed to council is on those options that we came in with earlier this year that would bring that budget down to the high level is to reduce some service hours from 102 down to 90,000. But again, it's going to be very difficult for us to make predictions on revenue because it is a real unknown when we cut services to how it's going to impact the election. Now, you so know, if you want to be very safe, you might reduce that in to 80,000 service hours instead of 90. But I don't think the council wants us coming back with the surplus at the end of the year, having, you know, sort of, well, done by the fact that we've driven the ridership down from, say, 2.1 million down to 1.5 million. You know, that's our quandary, is that we are trying to get as much service out as we possibly can for you. If we have a plan to say,
look, Frank, I won't for a minute say you're not in a tough place to try to design this thing, okay? As we know, the economy's been a little soft, and we think it's going to be back. Not for a minute arguing that point with you. All I'm saying is that if it was 2011, you missed your budget by $900,000. If it had not been for the money that you've gotten from that building, okay, you would have been coming to council for another $900,000 if you came today, I just didn't know. I wouldn't know where we would get it. That's what scares us.
And, you know, quite honestly, it was not our decision that the money should come from equity.
I didn't say it was, but if there was no equity there, sir, you'd have
to come. I guess the point being is probably what should have happened is it should not have come from equity. We should have had to come to council at the time for the money. And at that point in time, then the current decisions might have been made in terms of what we were going to do for service levels, whether we're going to try to fund it more or we're going to, you know, drive the service level numbers down.
That's it. Thank you kindly. Thank you, Your Worship.
Thank you, Councilor Mackley. Councilor Mackley.
Thank you, Your Worship. Well, Frank, I want to go back a little bit. I think one of the things for me when I first found this information is I didn't realize that the monies from your building that you were using that to sort of bring deficit down. I wasn't aware of that. And so I want to go back. When was the building sold in 2010? I wasn't here then, so I don't recall.
No, it was sold in 2009, I believe.
So then,
and well, I'm not sure when the money was finalized.
So who made the decision, or how did this decision come about that it was decided that transit would keep the funding? I understand it was 1.9 million that you got for the building.
Right.
So was it the city's decision?
No, that's not our decision.
Because the building would have been owned by the city.
No, this building was owned by the city of transit, but so I mean,
the city owned St. John's transit.
Yeah, the city decided what was going to happen with the
So do you think that council from 2010 knew each year, because I mean I've been back here for 2 years and a half. I was not aware in our last two budgets that some of your deficit was covered by the monies from the building.
I thought council.
I definitely didn't know. So I'm assuming other people around the table didn't know. That came in kind of a shock.
No, I'm finding out now that council didn't know this, but because
I don't know anywhere on our financial statements where it shows that. See, it didn't show that there was funding. You know, we just put our financial statements that probably includes transit, and there's nothing on there like that. So, I mean, it came as a surprise to some of us, anyway.
It came as a surprise that you didn't know, but I take responsibility. I guess we should have been coming into council and saying this is how it's funded this year.
So then the amounts there on that reduction, that pretty much comes out to the 1.9 million, and then it's pretty much it. That's
yes.
It. You got 284 left, that's it.
Yes.
And that's still there today.
Yes.
So I guess, how do you do your finances? You do it through our department. We do it. But you have somebody in your commission that gives those figures, I assume, to our finance department.
We would input invoices into the city system, the Navigate system, mm-hmm. and we would input checks with the city prepares a financial statement for it. We had an account at one time, but it was replaced through a staff reduction by buying the service from the city, which was considered cheaper at the time than trying to do it ourselves.
And you pay us? You.
We pay, well, I think it's around $45,000 a year.
Well, that's one of the big shocks for me, that I just know that's what's happening, see. So,
we'll take responsibility.
I'm not asking you for that. I'm just saying that I didn't know, and it came as a surprise to some of us. I know that the transit had always had a deficit. I just didn't know we had the money from the building, and they were using that to sort of subsidize every year. So I just want to ask you something on routes. Like when you were here the last time, and I think I can ask on routes at this meeting, I think I can. The last time when you were here, you said that you needed about $250,000 if we were to have the same routes for 2015 as we do right now in 2014.
$250,000 more.
Yes.
And that was back in May, and you know we weren't as aware of what was going on. Our revenues been under budget by $30,000 to $40,000 a month. Does that mean it's just staying in the wrong place?
So now it would be more than, like probably more than that if you were to keep the exact routes that you have now for next year.
That's right. I think you'd have to use the base of where we're at for the cost of the city this year. It would be above that. Now, that's not something we've worked on lately, just to determine what it would be. I suspect the number would be, we'd be using this as a base of $5,787,000. And again, you know, it's very dependent on what the ridership results would be. Will it increase next year? We don't know. We're having great difficulty predicting ridership.
But I guess I understood from the meeting in May, that was the month it was, that if we didn't give you 250 or we didn't have the 250,000 to give you, that you probably would eliminate some of the longer routes, like the Long Loman Road at Lauderdale.
I have that here. If you want me to, that presentation I made today, if you want me to.
Well, no, that's up to Tom. I'm interested to get that answer from you because.
Well, I think what we said was that we could put a service out. We looked at many different ways of redesigning it. We could put a service out.
You might have to speak into the mic for a minute.
We could put a service out, I believe it's around 98,000 hours. That would be fairly similar to what we had now, but it would cost $250,000 more. Now, you know. That again was using rider expectations of around $2,450,000. The problem is that as you reduce service, you lose riders fairly quick. As you bring service back, the riders don't return near as fast. It can take a long time. So that would be the real risk in a change like that and trying to do that. Would the ridership start to come back? And I guess at this point in time, what we've seen over the last couple of years is that we'd have great concerns that there wouldn't quite be an increase in ridership, and it's something we really should look at again.
Okay, I just have a couple other questions.
But just one comment on that is that we were looking at still trying to reduce service hours by about 4,000, but having a service that was still pretty much out there, you know, doing what's doing now. But one of the things that would happen is we have one main line in that service, and the west side, rather than being a main line up to Lancaster Mall, from Callister Place, would end up connecting at King Square.
Have you ever worked your system out so that you could say, or maybe you can't say right now, but could you know how many routes you can handle or have here in the city of St. John for the $5 million that you take in revenue? I mean, if you didn't have, you know, if we couldn't give you a deficit or cover any deficit, your expenses are.
In theory, that if we were to run only the main lines and run them only during peak hours, you might have something fairly close to break even, but it wouldn't be $5 million for revenue. It would be maybe, you know, you'd be down to very few service hours. You just ran the main lines with a bit of frequency during peak hours. You might be down to 10 drivers. So, I mean, you know, this is all off the cuff type of thing. And if you were down to those 10 drivers, you'd be putting out about 20,000 service hours. And in fact, you might have a chance that you could retain enough ridership. I mean, East West buses now vary around 45 to 50 people an hour. Would you be able to keep that? But there's no question those buses are fed by the feeder routes, and they wouldn't be there anymore to feed them. So it's hard to know. There's nowhere does it break even type of thing. It's just hard to know what happened, but that's what you would have to do. If you're trying to make it, I guess what you're talking about is trying to make it a break even system.
Well, a little closer than one of these now.
Yeah. I mean, we showed the slide that at 46% recovery, we're almost 25% ahead of the areas of the country. So, I mean, I don't know that it could be much better than with this level of service than it is now.
Well, I have one other question. I know in the past we've often asked you over the years about using smaller buses.
Yeah.
Especially after 6 o'clock at night. Well, I would say probably for all the routes in St. John after 6 o'clock at night that a small bus can handle.
Yes,
and you've always said that small buses require more maintenance or not as cost effective. So do you still feel that way?
Well, there's a new small bus around. There are heavy-duty small buses being produced. There's one being produced in B.C. that is it's Chinese bus, basically, being assembled in B.C. One of the major manufacturers is starting a small bus. Now, by small bus, I mean there are 28 passengers. 28 passengers would certainly handle our service most of the day, except during peak. And these buses, you could stand people on them. So even, like one of the problems we get into is most routes, we have two trips a day, particularly with the school children, where we do actually fill the bus. But we could probably get by with those buses in those routes during that time. Now, just because we're able to stand so many people on them. The cost of these buses is they're about $280,000. They're a long-term bus. They're designed to last 10 years. Which means we could probably get 15 out of them, because right now we're buying buses that are designed to last 12 and we're getting 18 to 20 years out of them. My concern has always been with the cutaway vehicles. That's like the truck bodies with a passenger thing on the back of them, because we have a fair bit of experience with those using them in the handy bus service. And, the kind of hours we put on a bus, like we find we're getting about 5 years out of them in the handy bus service. And if we were to bring them into our own service, because we keep buses out for 16 hours sometimes, certainly handy bus does, we're afraid that even though the cost for a low floor one is about $135,000, I think that what would happen is you would have to buy five or six of them, get the same lifespan as you get out of a heavy duty bus. But these new vehicles, that they're a different kettle of fish, and they're starting to be used in a few spots. BC, they're very common. They're using them. If they're using them extensively in smaller communities, because BC Transit runs all the transit systems in the province of British Columbia, with the exception of Vancouver, and like places like Whistler has a transit system, and that's all they use are these small buses and these heavy duty small buses. There's other systems that have gotten into them. Calgary has started them out, they're using truck cutaways, although they are looking at moving to the small buses because they're having poor experience with the truck cutaways. They've started to use them as community buses where they pick up and come out to a high-frequency main line. That's being looked at in a number of different spots, and as to what vehicle they're going to be bringing into it, I'm not sure, but they are certainly looking at small buses that would loop through different parts of like Lockholm and Broadway, for example. A bus would loop through Lakeview Heights and drop people off at a connection point for an express bus going in. Our problem, of course, is we don't have the frequency to meet those sorts of things. We tend to be doing this where there's 10-minute headways so that people can out and there's a quick connection for them. Calgary's also running those buses now. Off-peak, they'll keep them in the area, and off-peak they'll introduce them on one of the main lines. But some of the advantages they're having is they're paying the drivers almost $9 an hour less, and they started a different business. It was called a community bus, and union challenged them, but they were successful in keeping the union out of it, or I should say keeping out of it, not having the union rates paid. And they've been running those buses quite successfully on a financial basis. They are looking at moving to our heavy duty vehicle.
Well, my 3 minutes is probably up. I have two more questions, so I'll wait. I'll go ahead. Well, the other, I have two more. One is the COMEX. Are we in any way subsidizing that?
No. Although the reality is, what we're making on it is not near as much as it was because they said ridership declines too, about 10%. And in fact, we're talking with them right now because it's the agreement is up at the end of this year. About increases that we're asking them to look at to get it back in line and, give us some donation towards the organization. And they're looking at, much the same as council here, they're looking at that they have concerns about their budgets, and they're looking at maybe reducing the amount of service and different things. They're looking at fares and something like that.
Do you have all the numbers working out for that? Like what it costs, how much money you make on it,
What our direct cost is, in other words, to run the bus. And that's taking in driver costs, maintenance, full maintenance costs, full parts costs, full fuel costs, is about $78 an hour. And we're looking to get from them in the area of about $80 an hour. Now, when I say full driver costs, I would include the supervision portion of the driving department. I would also include the management portion of the maintenance department, all that sort of thing. So that's what they're contributing to. They're contributing to our overheads. If we lose the service, we would be, in a more difficult position because we would have to pick up all the costs of those things entirely. There would be no contribution from this.
Well, you wouldn't be using it. If the other municipalities don't pay, that we'd just eliminate it, would it not?
Well, that's right. We would eliminate it. But what I'm saying is they're paying for a portion of the dispatcher that's in the office now that's answering the telephone. They're paying for a portion of the manager, the director of transportation. They're paying for a portion of the maintenance manager, that sort of thing. And those costs would still be there.
And my final question right now is that you just said something, and I thought, oh, maybe it'd work here. BC had one bus company through the whole province.
Yes.
Except
Vancouver. Vancouver is separate. BC Transit runs Victoria and all the other communities, but Vancouver is a different.
So you must meet with representatives on the transit system from Moncton and Fredericton, I suppose, from time to time.
Yes, once a year, in fact, we get together.
Is there any advantage of all three cities joining together for a transit system?
We've done some group purchases before, type of thing. I couldn't really answer that, but probably there would be. I would think anytime you get larger, there's usually economies of scale.
I assume those two cities have to pay a subsidy also.
Yes.
So I wonder if, whether we could share buses, do whatever. Not that far away.
Well, there's been occasions, like for example in Moncton when they've had these concerts, we've sent buses up chartered them to the city to meet their needs. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be able to do that anymore because we're finding that we're having trouble doing charters during peak periods. We're having a hard time getting enough buses out for peak periods, so we don't have a lot of buses. If it's on a Saturday, we can come up with extra buses. So we've done some of that for sure. Opportunities that have arisen with that.
No, I kind of mean that we just have the one company and they ride all three cities somehow.
Well, that's very much what BC Transit does. For example, BC Transit would do the economic or the financial statements for all of those small transit systems. Mm-hmm. So they do it all under one, and that possibly that could happen also.
Well, thank you. Thank you,
Councilor. Deputy.
Thank you, Your Worship. Thanks, Frank. I've got a few questions, and they probably bounce around because I was just jotting them down. In 2011, you mentioned that you expected a revenue decrease, but you actually experienced a revenue increase.
I think that's probably right. you know, like, in 2008, the world economy went tank. It didn't happen in St. John until 2010 when things started to slow down. So we did not, we did not expect our revenue would increase that year, but it did slightly. We did expected a, we got more revenue than we expected actually in 2012 because of the cuts. It's hard to know how the cuts are going to impact you. But then I think that the impact of the cuts really followed into the following year. People made arrangements, but not immediately. You know, the service was not as attractive as it used to be. I tell the story all the time about the lady at my dentist's office, the dental technician, who was, you know, she was probably around 50 or so, who had used the bus for 20 years to go to work and come home. And when we made the cuts, she had to go to work half hour earlier, and she had to come home half hour earlier because of how it affected her feeder run, and she bought a car. You know, those kinds of decisions, when they're made, to get her back, even if I bring the service back, and maybe she'll come back someday, but not immediately.
So if you hadn't had a revenue increase in 2011, that almost $1 million reduction would have been greater than that then?
Yes.
So in this particular year, when did you start to anticipate an over-expenditure?
We anticipated revenue problems probably in by March. Things were, for us, there's defining months. We find April and May define how things are going to go for the year, and particularly September after the summer vacation. And we were looking forward to hoping something would happen in September, but the numbers came out flat again. They were basically tracking very much on last year's. So we were aware that we were having revenue shortfalls of between $30,000 and $35,000 to $40,000 a month, every month.
And so were there any changes that were made to operations as a result of that?
No. The only change we can make is a reduction in service. And a reduction in service for us is about a four-month process because we've got to draw new schedules, we've got to work with posters, we've got to change our GPS. It's an extensive process.
So do you ever do revised budgets, like interim budgets? So in April when you saw that was happening, have you ever in the past done a budget revision that would then be resubmitted to the funders or council?
No, we have not done that. I mean, we've certainly made the commission aware of where we were headed. I think Donna can confirm I was saying very far back that we were headed for a $450,000 problem. And the city gives us projections based on linear things that offer financial statements, and they were showing higher numbers than that, but I mean, theirs are all linear, and I used to go through them just to see, you know, if they were reasonable or not. But they were predicting at that time about $600,000, and I was predicting about $450,000.
So are we losing money on the school kids? Because I heard you say that that we have full buses when we're dealing with the school kids. So
it generates about $500,000 for us for a year, the school contracts. Now, we used to do, we had a contract with them. We no longer have a contract. They're buying monthly passes and distributing them to the students. The revenue is saved about the same because they're doing it for less students now than they used to. We do have a problem in some of the feeder routes that we have a trip coming out that the bus is full of students. And, you know, when we look at small buses, that's going to be a problem. But it's not a problem that's insurmountable. We could always put two buses down, but then there's the cost of putting the extra bus down. But what we found over the years is the number of students that we're getting has been declining. We're down at now, I think it's to about 850. When I first came with transit, it was about 2,400 students. So it's gradually fading, but it still generates about $500,000. It's heyday back. Years ago, and I'm talking in the 80s, it was generating $750,000. It was a very significant portion of the transit revenue, not near as much now.
So that $500,000, if we lost the $500,000 from the students, but we could move to a smaller bus?
On feeder routes, yes. We could probably use smaller buses.
So then would we recoup that and it would be a...
I don't think you would recoup that much, no. You know, I mean, a smaller bus, it depends again on what you're trying to, what you buy. If you buy the truck cutaway buses, I believe that in the end, the cost of capital is almost as much in terms of maintenance, in terms of replacement. The heavier duty ones, I think that they have a lot of potential, that they could last much longer, and that in fact the capital costs figured out on an annualized basis would be less than a big bus. A knowledge of how they're going to last is not really out there, but they, you know, they're saying they're a 10-year bus, and I don't think they'd make that kind of a statement unless they believed it was. And if they're saying it's a 10-year bus, the same as the heavy duty guys saying it's a 12-year bus, and we can get 18 to 20 out of it, I'm sure we could get a lot more than 10 out of these heavier duty small buses.
So will that be part of your assessment when you start to look at things like the smaller buses to say maybe we just don't do school kids anymore?
No, I don't think we'd want to not do them, but I think that we would have what we would have to face is the idea of standing them. We try not to stand people now. Or the other option is to send a second bus out just for that one trip. I don't think we want to start trading drivers off between small buses and large buses. In other words, you know, take a large bus out to the guys for peak hours, then go back to the small bus. Because the problem there, of course, is you'd end up with two fleets, a small bus fleet and a large bus fleet. Mm-hmm. And the cost of turning them off, you know, switching them off. It's a conundrum for transit systems, and it's a complaint they all receive in terms of they see large buses going on around off-peak hours with very few people on them. And, you know, the reason is that the biggest cost of the bus is the driver, and you're trying to limit the number of drivers you have in service at any one time. But there isn't any question, all our feeder routes, with the exception of two, maybe four trips, they're averaging 10 to 12 people. Off-peak, they wouldn't be a problem at all to handle them with a small bus. It'd just be those trips. You'd have to come up with some way to handle them during those trips. And one of the ways would be to consider putting out extras on those just for that one trip type of thing.
And I'm not trying to beat the school thing to death, but to me, if carrying the school kids is costing us money in terms of needing a bigger bus or having to send two buses or whatever it is, then I think that cost needs to be sent along to the customer, but they have probably a discussion for a different day. So I guess my concern with the budget, and I like to have numbers, is that we're not really getting true budgets for council, right, to make decisions on. And I know Councillor McLaren and I faced that at regional facilities where we wanted to make sure that even though the city is, you know, legislatively required to meet overruns, we want to make sure that the budgets that we were getting at regional facilities were accurate, as accurate as they could be. So that concerns me a little bit that we're that far off, because when I looked at transit last year, when I'm going to look at it this year, I made the decision last year about what we could afford to do based on the numbers that were in front of me. And if an extra shortfall is anticipated, then for me personally, I would like to know about that.
To take my point, Councillor.
Yes.
I'm trying to get my head around how we should probably be doing this. And one of the issues we have is that to put a service out, That's a change. We need significant lead time. Maybe what we should be doing is coming into council in July and saying, council, this is what we feel the current service we have. This is what we feel it's going to cost next year. You understand that it has become difficult to predict ridership. It never used to be, but it certainly has been the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, council saying, well, that's not a number that's acceptable to us. Come back in 2 weeks with a service level proposal that meets this number. Maybe that's the way we should be doing it, but it's tough for us to do anything when we find out in January that this is what our number is going to be for next year. Because even if we were to make the changes to try to gear the thing now, before we could have them effective, have them in effect, we'd be halfway through the year and half. Our problem would be half over type of thing. We'd almost have to double the correction to pick it up on the balance of the year. We almost need to know much further ahead as to what it is that council feels like they want to purchase from the transit, what level of service hours. And we'll try to design it the best we can. I think, though, that we also need some guidelines. I mean, we're making decisions based on, you know, what we think we should be trying to do socially, what we should be doing in coverage areas. And I really believe the council should be giving us directions there, that if they want us to cover certain areas, they want us to give us to give certain levels of frequency and these sorts of things, then we'll design a service and we'll tell them what the cost would be. And, you know, if they don't think that's acceptable, then they could tell us what they want to change in terms of the guidelines that they gave us.
And so I hear what you're saying, but so when I look at this, these numbers, I say that we, for 4 years consistently, were at least $300,000 in the red. So to me, I heard you say something, you know, we don't want to show a surplus, and I don't think anybody around this table believes that transit is a money-making treasure, and we absolutely understand the council needs to subsidize that service. It's a service to the citizens. However, it's understanding what that subsidy needs to be. So for me, I'd rather have really good information so I can make really good decisions.
One of these slides, Councillor, the areas on 31 cities, that's really given, not to say that's what you should be spending, but just to say that what you're spending is, you know, if you're spending that, it's appropriate. However, that doesn't go to affordability. And, you know, that's a decision council has to make as to, all we can do is try to get the service with a solid recovery rate and to meet whatever goals they feel we should try to meet and hopefully bring it in on a budget number that that you feel is appropriate.
And that actually is exactly the point I'm trying to make, because I thought I made a decision last time on affordability, but I didn't, right? So I was had rose-colored glasses on because you were able to subsidize your budget from another source that I didn't know anything
about,
right? And Councillor Merrithew and I might disagree on where that money went, because I would have put it on the mortgage as opposed to subsidize operating. I might have hit capital with it, but it is what it is. But for me, I want to know truly what it's going to cost you to offer that bus service, because I understand that council needs to make the hard decisions about what level of service is going to be provided, but the only way I can do that and do it properly is if I know exactly what it's costing me.
Well, I'm responsible. I told you last year that I anticipated a revenue source of $5,138,000 based on on ridership assumptions, and I was wrong. Yeah.
And that happens. I mean, we can't predict things with 100% accuracy, but I guess...
I'm guilty of rose-colored glasses because it's about keeping the service out, and, I've got to restrict myself and say that, you know, look at the worst possible case scenarios rather than the best possible case scenarios, because obviously I really missed the boat on that one. I've never missed one that bad in terms of ridership production.
Well, I think... partly, too, from my perspective, I think council may need to look at how we get reported to. So maybe it is that we have an interim reporting, because, you know, it would be easier to anticipate how we're going to shuffle the deck to cover a deficit in April than it will be in November.
No, I think it would be most appropriate, now that I've learned what's going on, to come in here every quarter and advise over where our finances are. You know, I apologize. I wonder where you didn't know.
All right, that's, I'm fine, thanks. Thank you.
Mr. McGarry's chair, your information.
Yes.
My understanding of whether Councillor Reardon is a different person who actually chairs the meeting.
Don Smith actually chairs the meeting.
I've got some questions for the actual chair. Because I've got part of the concerns I'm hearing relate to the understanding of proper roles of governance between the council and the commission. And I just want to make sure that we're on the same wavelength when it comes to the role and responsibility of the transit commission. It's my understanding, and if I'm mistaken about this, I want to be correct. It's my understanding that the St. John Transit Commission is a legally separate entity It's a separate employer. It's completely arm's length from the city. The bus drivers, the employees, you, Mr. McGarry, no one that works for the Transit Commission is actually an employee of the City of St. John. Is my understanding right on that?
That's correct.
And so you're a completely arm's length organization. The only relationship between Transit and the City of St. John is we deliver you a check to provide a service. Is that?
That's correct.
Yes. And I also want to make sure I understand clearly the mandate of the Transit Commission Board. And the board members, they are appointed by council. I think I'm right about that.
Correct.
But you, your board, it doesn't report to council. Am I right about that?
That's correct.
And
except for the annual report or interim reports as requested by council, then we'll be in to see you other than that, no.
And the management, including Mr. McGarry, he takes his marching orders from the commission board, not from council. Am I right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. And the mandate of, if I could ask it this way, what from your role as a day-to-day chair of the board, do you see as the scope and mandate of the commission board?
There's nothing clear in writing, but our perspective is, first of all, we're volunteers. We're here to pay back to the city, if you wish, I worked my whole life here in the city, and I said, I think I'd like to do some volunteer work, and that's the reason we're here. We're here trying to provide the very, very best transportation system we can, given financial parameters that we receive from the city. Many things are beyond our control. Fuel is volatile. I mean, I think the figure was $120,000 more this year than last.
This year, I think it'd be correct on that.
So that's you know, say we want a very strict budget. We're trying to hedge fuel costs right now. That's one of the things we're looking at, to hedge it so we'll have a better handle on the fuel costs. Say it's definitely going to cost us this much, regardless of what happens to the market or whatever happens to. If we buy fuel on the provincial grid, we have a provincial price for fuel. We're paying $1.18, I think it is right now, for a liter for diesel fuel. You'll see it at the service stations at $1.32 or $1.34. Because of the provincial buying, we're under that. Okay. But the taxes that we're paying on parks, I sign the checks every week, glory be to heavens, we're paying 13% on every single part that goes into a motor coach that's 15, 16, or 10 years old. But that's the parameter. The parameter is to do the very best for the city. I mean, we're looking at small buses right now. We're hoping to have a report by the end of December. We're looking at the manufacturers of them. We're looking at size. We're looking at cost. We're trying to get a handle on operating costs and gallery. And then the commission will take a look at that and say, yes or no, we think we should go with this. They're going to be half the price of a larger coach. Will they last as long? They say they will. We don't know because we haven't had the experience, and neither has Calgary.
Maybe, and I don't mean to interrupt. All this is important for me.
Yes.
But what I really wanted to understand is, maybe your answer is an indication of what I'm concerned about, is in terms of governance and providing direction to the Transit Authority, to Mr. McGarry and his
yes.
staff, does the Transit Board understand that it's their role to give him the instructions on what the service is going to be for the city? Does the Transit Board understand that or not?
I believe we do. We get the budget or the subsidy from the city. We will then look at the number of hours. Frank will come in with a recommendation based on consultation with the staff and say, for this much money, we can provide 102,000 or whatever number of hours. We could then direct them and say,
In fact, we're talking right now, we're saying if we're given a lower amount, and it's going to take us 3 to 4 months to put this into effect, we have to double cut for the first 4 months. Otherwise, we're going to be 4 months in our deficit. And we can't have that. So we will then say, build the service based on X dollars, X number of hours. Again, take me into consultation, what council asks. They want...
Can I just stop you right there?
Sure.
Can I... Because I want to be really crystal clear about this. This council doesn't direct the transit commission. We have that much of
a...
No, and if you can just bear with me, sure. I realize that we may have a voice, but the entire decision-making authority and all the responsibility for the service that's going to be delivered to the City of St. John is on your commission. That's where the decision... I just want to be really... In terms of the governance of this, and I realize you may want to be collaborative in terms of talking with us about what our thoughts are, but this council's decision is only in respect of approving the budget. And I'm concerned from what I've heard from Mr. McCary, because Mr. McCary, I think, at least alluded to the idea that, well, we want to provide, we want to, you know, do what the council wants us to do in terms of providing a service. That's not how it works. It works quite the opposite of that. The transit commission decides what service is going to be provided. And we simply, as council, give a budget and say, look, provide the best service you can. Here's your budget. By the way, don't blow your budget. Don't ever go over your budget. Don't surprise us in November with the budget deficits. But the roots, all the service, would it be helpful? Because we want to be collaborative on this. Is there some misunderstanding or some disconnect in terms of the role, authority, and governance that your board has over the commission?
I don't think so.
And the description I've just provided, are we on the same page in terms of that?
I use the word directed. I'm sorry, I'll retract that and say the council will express, individual members will say, well, look, there's no bus service in a certain area in the evenings. So we look at the whole perimeter. We look at the social aspect. If there's certain folks in certain areas of the city that work in shopping centers, and they need service to get home at 10 o'clock at night, which the malls close at 9:30, how do they get home?
And
so we look at all of those parameters in trying to say, well, can we put a bus out there at 9 o'clock, 9:30, whatever, to look after those folks?
And we do appreciate that you take into account what we're saying, only to the extent that we're representatives in the community. So the men and women that sit on either side of me, they're the voice of the people, and so they'll express concerns that this road is asking for service. But we want your commission to know I can tell you this with 100% certainty. The reason that you and other members were appointed that commission is because when we appointed the commission members, we had complete confidence that you would understand fully the weight of the mandate that you had. And although you may hear from politicians, the decision makers, you on that commission board, you are the decision makers. You're the ones giving Mr. McCary the direction. And although Mr. McCary may come in and provide us with all kinds of fancy options, we don't get to select the option. Your commissioner selects the option. We give you a budget, and you put in place the option. If it's the, you know, the service within a certain area and reducing certain rooms, your commission makes that decision.
Correct.
And you're never probably going to satisfy 100% of the council members or 100% of the community, but that's the tough role, and we thank you for taking it on. We do sincerely thank you for taking it on. But I just want to be really clear on the governance piece that we're on the same
page. Yes, we understand entirely that we're given money, given a subsidy by the city to provide a transportation system. Given that parameter, we then design the system for $100,000 or whatever, and we will consider all the items that I've talked about. social considerations, economic, certainly. As Frank has mentioned, the hardest problem we have had is ridership. How do you know? CUTA, the Urban Transit Association of Canada, will tell us if you cut service hours, there's going to be a drop in passengers. And we've heard this, and you can look back and say, well, the reality is, yes, we have lost ridership. Will it come back? I guess given the economics in St. John, we're hoping, but that's the kind of thing we have to look at when we're given the budget for next year.
Can I switch gears with you just for a second?
Please.
Just over to the financial side. And thank you. I know that we're taking up your Friday afternoon, and I appreciate this. Mr. McCary's numbers that he's put on the board indicate, as Councilor Merrithew said, and as the deputy pointed out, that for pretty well as long as I've been involved with this council, the Transit Commission has been running super deficits. They've been blowing their budgeted deficit number year after year. And in terms of this year in particular, so I guess past in the past, mm-hmm. and it's difficult to deal with that, but my understanding from what Mr. McCary indicated is that there was that the indication was as early as March of this year that that things were running behind the tune of $30,000 to $35,000 per month. Is that the earliest your board knew about that, or did
my recollection, yes, the end of March, but as Frank mentioned, usually April, May are the bellwether months sort of indicate, you know, what's going on. January, February, March, you get snowstorms and you get aberrations like that. Once the better weather and people get out of their homes or they're going shopping or whatever, there's sort of the indicators. But we have lost ridership. There's absolutely no question about it. We've therefore lost revenue.
So by May for sure,
We've run a downhill slide, yes.
There would have been no question in your
well, you're always hoping that
sure.
things will improve, but they did not.
On the objective numbers, everybody was, look, there's no chance of this.
They did not.
Right. Can I ask, and my understanding is too, that it takes about 4 months to change the system to make alterations.
Yes.
So if a recommendation had been brought forward in May, If the commission had given direction to Mr. McCary in May to look, say, look, you know, Frank, as you call him at the commission table, you've got to do something about this because we're already by that point we're already $100,000, you know, past our
right.
budget. You've got to do something in terms of the roots. Fair to say that 4 months later, by September-ish, you could have had that in place.
Yes.
Why wasn't that, or was that considered?
Every month we look at reports from Mr. McCary and staff on ridership, revenues, and so on. It was going down, and we were saying, well, golly, it's going to take us 4 months. We have cut the service, you know, as you can see by the chart. The service has been going up and down and up and down. And any one of us can give cases where individuals have told us, I've given up. Hitting the bus. I don't know what time it's coming. The schedule keeps changing. We're saying if we do it again in the middle of the year, which is a very difficult time to do it, we're going to lose more passengers. So we're saying let's hold on. Let's hope that there will be a bit of a recovery in September, October.
But my understanding is, and I could be wrong about this, mm-hmm. but my understanding is the best time to make changes to the service is to kind of roll them in over the summer or over the Christmas holidays because they're the lowest ridership. So there was at least an opportunity to look at changing that service over the summer months of that in September for a fresh school year.
Could have been done.
And how regularly do you look at the budget shortfall or is it done on a monthly basis?
Monthly. Usually we have a meeting at the end of the month or toward the end of the month. That's when the reports will come in from the previous month. For example, our last meeting was last week, and we had the reports current to the end of September. So we are almost 2 months, month and a half behind by the time we get all the revenue or all the data from the accounting office here in St. John at City Hall.
To this point, because I appreciate your first point, I appreciate that you're a volunteer, you're giving your time to the city.
That's not an excuse.
No, it's not. It's the reality.
Yes, you're
relying on staff to bring recommendations to you.
Exactly, correct.
Have there been any recommendations at any point this year from your staff on what to do to change the routing and design or service to address this what's going to end up being a hugely blown budget?
Not that I can recall. No.
Has the board at this point asked its staff to bring forward solutions on how to deal with this blown budget at this point?
Well, we're looking at two things right now. The first is the small buses that's been talked about. This was one of the major items in our meeting. We want a report toward the end of December as to the types of buses that are available, their passenger load, their serviceability, longevity, if we can get a prediction on that, and then go to council and say, here is what the commission recommends.
But again, can I just stop you right there?
Yes.
Why would you come to council for this recommendation?
Well, it's been talked about at council.
But can I just in terms of the responsibility for making a decision on these small buses?
Well, we'll make the decision. The decision will be made by the commission. But the capital cost of any new equipment obviously goes to the city.
So I want to be really clear when you bring this issue of the small bus forward. We don't want to see a request to council for a recommendation.
This will be our recommendation to council.
It's got to be different than that. And I'm sorry to be so blunt about this. But your commission has to make a decision and then come to council and say, council, our commission has made a decision.
Well, that's what I just said. We will make the decision and come to council
to request the funding.
Correct.
Not to get a recommendation. Because we don't want to give you recommendations on how to
run. I said, if I'm correct, we will make the decision whether to go forward with small buses. We will come forward with a recommendation that we buy bus A or B or whatever. The cost is this. We need 10 of them or 5 of them or 6 of them.
The only thing that council is going to be interested, we're not going to be interested in the kind of bus A, B, C, or D. We're not going to be interested in how many of them. We want to know how much money you need and what your request. The only thing we want to know what your budget request is, and we probably want to know what you're going to do with it. But it's not our job to tell your commission what to do. And I want to really emphasize this because I think I'm concerned that maybe some commission members feel this council is trying to tell it what to do. And we've tried to make a really personally, and I can speak on behalf of council, we don't want to tell your
commission. Your worship, I don't know of any of the members of the commission that feel that way. I don't.
Okay, good. I want to make sure that you don't.
No, that's fine, yes.
We want, you are an arm's length. We have every confidence you're going to make the decision.
Well, that's not the way it came out in the paper.
Well, what we have a concern about is how the budget has been managed at the transit commission.
That's a total change, sir, from Wednesday's paper. When I sent you an email, and I'm saying that, you lost all confidence in us.
That's true, Mr. Smith. I've lost a great deal of confidence, if not all confidence, and that's why we're having this meeting today, to turn a page to rebuild that confidence. We can't go through what we just went through and not ask ourselves what's going on.
And
if I can just finish, we're having this meeting because this is the concern. Not that I, Mel Norton, have, or not that commissioner or a counselor so-and-so has, but the men and women of this city have a great deal of concern that at the middle of November we would learn about a deficit of this size. And we know already so far that the commission knew about these shortfalls as early as March, things were made for sure, and that changes could have been made and weren't made. And so are we right to legitimately question, is it in any way a personal attack on you or any commission member?
It's not, I think it would have been handled.
If I can just finish it without you interrupting me, I'm sure you're really candid and blunt.
Yeah,
but it's in no way an attack on your person or the persons of any member of the commission. This is about the taxpayers. This is a business matter about the taxpayers. And that's our first and solemn obligation. We've sworn an oath to look after the taxpayers of this community. And what we've learned is that $800,000 potentially of their dollars has been spent without our approval and without us knowing. And we can't for a minute turn a blind eye to that and pretend there's not a serious issue with how this commission has operated over the last year and apparently since 2011, because not once over that period of time has the commission ever stuck to its budget. And we've got to change that culture. So I just want to come to the next question. When the commission is seeing this blown budget over and over and over again, month after month, where does the commission think the money is going to come from to cover it?
Obviously, the city of St. John, I would presume.
Okay, can I just hone in right on that? Can we be of the understanding that the city of St. John is not the fallback for the transit commission or any other commission in sticking to its budget? Can we be really clear about that?
Yes.
Going forward, can we kill that culture that would for a moment believe that the city of St. John is the safety net for blown budgets in this community? The city of St. John is not the commission's bank. Can I be really clear about that? And can I be equally clear that going forward, this council expects, if we give you a budget, that the commission holds management at the commission, at the transit commission, to that budget, to the cent?
Yes. To the very best of our ability. As Frank has mentioned, if you know, mistake was made that we didn't pull the plug earlier. As you say, we talked about it. It was discussed, and we were hoping that it would turn around. It didn't.
I want to make sure that we've crushed and tossed into the Bay funding any culture of dependence on the city of St. John for blowing the commission's budget. We give you a budget at the beginning of the year, and what I've sensed from a number of the comments is that there's a sense of look. The city of St. John will just be there as a safety net. That is not how this council or this city is operating any longer. That may have been the culture under previous administrations. I can assure you, it is the furthest thing from the culture of this mayor and council. We're going to give a budget. We want the budget. The culture of dependency for commissions is over. And if we have to take, we want to work collaboratively to ensure that. But if we have to take other steps, we'll look at other steps to ensure that is legislated or whatever it has to be. But can you please put your other commission members on notice going forward? Culture dependency for blowing your budget is the responsibility for getting a solution is going to be on your transit commission. It's not going to be on the taxpayers of St. John. Am I clear?
Understood.
Okay. In terms of the routes, and you may want to. And the details of technical, some of these technical questions you may want to turn over to Mr. McCary. But what are the busiest routes that the transit operates right now?
Right. It would be our main lines. The busiest route would be the Calhoun Place, the Hospital University. The Lower West Route, 5 and 6 are very busy. The Lancaster to Calhoun Place would be the third. Those would be the three busiest routes.
And is there a specific time of day that they're most busy, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, they're most busy from, say, 7:30 to 9:30 in the morning. And because the students get out around 3 o'clock, from 3 o'clock to about 5:30
in the afternoon.
And you mentioned the ridership numbers for your buses. You mentioned, I think it was 2 million or so?
2,275,000.
And how are you counting the riders? rockets. What's the method you use to count rockets?
It's by fare extrapolation.
Okay, and there's not an actual counting system, is there?
We have some buses with counters on them that we use when we're trying to sample count a certain route, not very many. And we also rely on drivers for counts, which is not necessarily that reliable.
What recommendations are you or your staff making to the Transit Commission, presumably right away, to cut costs, reduce expenses right away, with the least impact to the riders?
I guess the reality is we're curious as to what we're going to get next year, so we need a target.
What I want to know is right now, Mr. McGarry, we're not talking about next year yet. Right now, you've blown your budget by about 800 grand based on some of the numbers, or 400 and some thousand, depending on other numbers. What recommendations today or next week are you making to your commission on cutting costs and reducing expenses with the least consequences for the riders?
Option one. That's what I will recommend.
In terms of the rear?
Yes.
And what about, my understanding is that in Calgary, as an example, my understanding is that these small buses, these shorter buses, they have about 200 of them operating in Calgary. My understanding, you were at WEFS earlier this year, weren't you, on a conference?
Yes.
When was that conference?
I don't believe it was this year, it was last year.
So you were in Calgary last year?
Yes.
For a conference, and you would have seen the smaller buses there last year. Why has it taken a full year to get around to making a recommendation or a decision or investigation on the small buses?
Well, the commission has just asked me for it.
Why didn't that recommendation on that come from the staff of the commission to the commission?
There's no question. I have always thought and have told the commission that I did not believe that small cutaway buses was a viable alternative for us.
Did you investigate those buses, the person going on them when you're in Calgary, talk to the drivers, talk to the mechanics?
No. I talked to the staff of them, but not the people on the buses, no.
You went all the way up there and you didn't take the time to do that. Why not?
Well, I know those buses. I mean, we operate those buses here in St. John. What I wanted to find out is what their experience was with them in terms of how they were using them.
So this has been an opportunity you've known about for a year, but your staff hasn't made the recommendation yet to the commission to look at these.
I talked to the commission that I don't believe small cutaway buses are a viable alternative to those.
Even though they're used in a leading city like Calgary.
Yes.
Calgary is one of the leading cities in our country.
When I speak to the people in Calgary who operate the service, they tell me that they have great concerns with the vehicle, and they are, in fact, looking at the heavier-duty vehicles to replace them. They started out with the idea that they could be a five-year vehicle, but they're finding that's not right, that they want to go to a three-year lifespan on them, and they want to look at the heavier-duty vehicle.
But, Mr. McGarry, you've known all through this year about these cost overruns that you're going through. And we know, we both know the definition of insanity is keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. You've known about this deficit over and over again this year. You've known about a possible solution, a possible opportunity, something that might mitigate these costs, these buses. But you've stuck doing the same thing. Why haven't you changed?
I don't believe these buses will mitigate our costs. I believe there may be some potential, but I better understand them, of the heavier-duty small buses that could have some positive impact in our operation.
It's my understanding that also in that community, I think it's a safety instructor for the driver, someone who has saved, I think it's up to 5% on fuel costs just by teaching drivers how to efficiently operate. Is that something that you brought as a recommendation to the commission?
No, there's no question. We have a very poor driver training process.
Besides giving you more money to the commission, because you're very candid, we don't have it. What can the city of St. John do to help that?
Well, I think we would like to know exactly what we're going to get next year, and we can design a service of that, and we will be very restrictive in terms of what we anticipate the ridership to be.
so we can get the budget numbers to you right away for next year.
So we can design a service and get it out hopefully as early as April.
And we're gonna work our butts off to get that to you right away. Is there anything else we can do?
I think that's the main thing, and we will design what we think is the best solution to the amount of money that you can afford. We will not be overly optimistic in terms of what the ridership will be, and we will introduce the service.
In terms of long-term planning, are you making any recommendations to your commission board in terms of long-term planning to address this so we don't ever revisit this kind of situation?
Well, I think you've made it clear that in the past we felt a certain responsibility to advise council of what the impacts of different changes will be, but I think you've made it clear tonight that the expectation is that's not what you want. You want us to manage the budget to the best possible effect to have the most riders possible, but not to go over budget.
Right, and we certainly want the communication. We want to know, but we want the communication back and forth, but the decision is your board's, and we want the commission to own these decisions. We can give you the budget, but it's not for this council to give you direction on the specific option. We've seen, certainly some of our other departments, and their departments within the city primarily, but the police department is a good example, and as is the fire department. They've both taken steps to generate revenue in other ways. And I think it was Councillor Lowe that talked about it, an idea along these lines, suggested their revenue generating idea. Have you made recommendations for any revenue generation ideas to your board, apart from obviously just picking up passengers in the normal routes? Any revenue generating ideas? And I think of the out of the box stuff that the chief of police has done with condiments, with the fire chief in terms of the fire training center. Both those departments have shown some good innovation. And has there been any innovation in terms of other revenue generating ideas? Leasing space in your headquarters, using buses for other purposes, anything on that front?
One of the things we're talking about now is the city closing their paint shop and moving it into our garage, because we certainly have a quality blank paint shop there, and there's opportunity for time in there that I think will work out very much. I believe that's something that we can do very, that can be to the advantage of both the city and St. John's Ransom. One of the things that we look at is leasing space, and we are leasing some space in the building, but frankly, there's a lot of space around us. It's a tough market right now to lease space in, but we are open for business. I've even talked to people who are storing trailers in for the winter months, different things like that. We've not had any takers yet, but I've certainly talked to a number of people, and it's out there that we are interested in leasing space. There's been some, we certainly looked at the idea of doing some competitive work in terms of, say, hiring another body person and doing body work for outside sources. But I've been advised by the commission that that's not a direction we should go in, because that would be inappropriate in that we're a subsidized service competing with private business around town. So we've sort of backed off from that.
And again, I want to be really, all these decisions are for your commission to make. Your commission's made decisions that, personally, I probably would have made a different decision, but we're not going to interfere in the day-to-day decisions. The only point in time when we get to ask questions is on things like this, when it comes to your taking money that we would prefer to not have to allocate because we haven't budgeted for it. We haven't budgeted for $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000 for the commission. But the decisions on how to generate revenue, that's up to your commission.
Your Worship, you've made that very clear. I certainly felt an obligation in the old days that we had to sort of get the blessing of council to move ahead, but I appreciate what you're saying, is that what you want is you want to move in based on the budget, regardless of what it is, in the best interest, the best we can produce for it.
Because that's where we've got a lot of common ground, if I should say, Mr. McGarry, is because I know personally that you're the kind of person that cares about the community, and I know that's the same with your board members, and we're all trying to pull in the same direction. We're trying to do the deliver the best thing for the community. I think if we all understand that that's the common premise that we're operating on, then we're all going to make the best possible decision, and we're going to have a lot of confidence that you're going to make recommendations and and that the board is going to give you direction and make decisions and vote in a way that's consistent with that.
Your Worship. Last spring we met with, I think the gentleman's name is Brian Irving from the city, I'm not quite sure whether real estate or whatever. The commission members have toured our facility. We presently rent space to the police department and to the St. John Parking Commission. We made Mr. Irving knowledgeable and said, look, we have space, if we can use it for your benefit, you want to rent, if any city department is compatible. That was in the spring. He said he would look at it and study it. He had the plans of our building. We haven't heard back yet, so I don't know if that's still being worked on or whatever. So we are looking actively at things like that. But as Frank said, it's a very soft market. But we have space available. We told the city, any reasonable city department that could utilize the space, more than welcome.
That's, I appreciate you alerting us that. That's something I hadn't heard. Thank you very much. Councilor Perrin.
Thank you, Your Worship. Question's done.
Sorry to take the question.
No, that's perfect. Frank, I can appreciate the fact that it's hard to find a crystal ball that will give you all the answers to all the problems in the world. But when it comes to pasture ownership, whether you add runs or take runs away, over the years that you've been on the transit, isn't there a general theme or a general thread through that? If we take this type of runoff in this type of an area that has X amount of people on that run, we can guesstimate, and I can appreciate that, I can't get it right on, we can guesstimate that we're going to lose 2%, 10%, 40%. Isn't there a general...
There's ways, you take a run off, we have some idea of what the usage is on the run.
Yeah, and percentage of that over the years.
That's what the cost of providing that run is.
Yeah. The other thing, if we can go back to that first slide. Now, in 2010, just walk me down through this. You had 117,000 service hours. You brought in almost 5.1 million in revenue, right? The 10 million is what?
Is the expenses for the service for that year.
And the cost of the city was?
4,911,000.
So then we drop down to the next, when we have the funding source.
And the subsidy covered it that year? It was a subsidy of 4,911,000.
From the city.
Of the city, yes.
From the city. So the equity took none of that, the shortfall was zero.
Right.
So when we go into 2011, you reduce the hours, but you gained
revenue was up, yes.
100,000, but your expenses were climbed 400,000, and the subsidy was 5.2 million. From the city,
yes.
So, in that year, you had 900,000.
The cost was 5.2 million. In that year, there was a subsidy of 4.3 million, and an equity reduction of 892,000.
You took that out of the building fund, yep. Or the sale of the building.
Yeah, well, that was how the city decided to finance.
No, I realize.
We didn't direct them to do that, but I certainly didn't disagree with it.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense, but, the building, I think, was sold in 2007, 2008, because I was with council at that time. So in that year, you took $900,000 on the sale price of the West Side Depot. But... How did our expenses jump almost $200,000, a little over $200,000, and we brought in more revenue. I don't see the numbers.
Well, our expenses increased that year. I mean, I didn't analyze what it was back in 2011, but we've been up and down a fair bit on fuel. And we've got our maintenance costs have been climbing as our fleet has gone up.
Well, we always seem to go, and City Hall does it as well. We always seem to go that our fleet's older, and we are racking up too much cost. When we went down, the Council of the Day went down to use a facility on Farrell Boulevard. You could basically throw a cat through any of those windows. It was duct tape trying to keep the window. Needed a new building. I agree with that. I didn't agree with the big one that the Council of the Day built. Anyway, that's another story. That's why you got so much room around it now. But the average age of the buses then, Frank, was 18, 19 years old.
No, the older buses. Our average age has never been that old. You couldn't operate. Our average age should be around 9. It's now around 12. Back then, I believe it was around 10.
Well, Frank, I don't want to argue with you, but I remember going up through those freezing cold bays that the men were working on repairing buses.
I might have been showing you buses that would be 18 years old. I mean, we currently have a bus on the road that's 1987, so that would be 27 years old. So we may, we've got, but the average age is, all the ages divided by the number of buses.
Well, aware of that. And we're shown buses that were being scavenged out in the backyard.
We still have those.
For parts that these guys were working on, freezing cold, garage.
And we still scavenge our buses when we retire them.
Yeah, that's good. But I'm pretty sure, if you'd like, I'd go back through some notes in those days, because that's why the council today ended up reinvesting in buses, because the fleet was 18 plus years old, is what we were being told.
Okay,
my memory's way off the wall then, Frank.
It's never been hard to average agency. It's never been that old.
Okay, but I'm telling you what I was told back then. I've got a pretty good memory, right? Anyway, it was an old...
it wasn't, not by me, I would never say that. We couldn't operate a fleet with an average age of that old. Certainly we have buses, we've always had buses that are that old.
The majority of the buses in that crash weren't the youngest. I'll give you that. Matter of fact, a good percentage of them were the old rounded back ones. And some of them that were being repaired in the garage were the same. But anyway, so the cost is I think repairing them, scavenging parts off them, doing things like that are a lot easier than making payments on a new one. Unless, of course, you got some cash cow out there that's going to pay them for you.
The major problem with older buses is when the structure becomes totally compromised. That the rust has gotten into the framing, et cetera, of the bus, that it's no longer safe. But that's when we retire them. It's no longer safe.
When they're not safe, then I agree with you. Take them off the road.
And the newer buses we have are stainless steel, and we're finding that the rusting has been, there's no rusting. These are buses that are now close to 12 years old, and we're not finding any rusting. So we really have no idea how long we're going to get out of these. The problem with stainless steel, the concern we have is that it's a more brittle seal than soft seal, and we may start getting cracking problems, and we haven't seen it yet.
Good. The other thing is that over the years that I've been here, we've also been, it's nice to hear this evening, that both from the commission chair and you, that we're visiting the small buses, because over the years, again, I believe it was you that was staunchly opposed to the smaller buses. Now, I'm not talking about the little minivans. As a matter of fact, there's a bus service in the city here that has the uses that run throughout the province. Those mid-sized buses, I think, are very appropriate. So it's good to hear that.
Now, you're talking about the charter service over west? Right now, from St. Andrews.
Well, there's that one, but there's also the one down in the old Ethics Center.
They're a very they're a very appropriate vehicle for the way they're using them. They don't push them here as hard as we would.
Well, but it's good that we're now looking at it, and therefore I hope the Lord that we're going to. You folks are going to revisit the three buses that this council, three large buses that this council has approved for next year. We just bought two this year. When you were made the presentation back in May, some questions from different councillors, I believe this one was from Councillor Norton, correct me if I'm wrong again. The student fares, we're subsidizing the school board for the student fares. We're still doing that?
No, we were charging them a percentage, regular contract. We were charging them a percentage rate based on usage of a regular fare. That's not the case now. Now they're buying monthly passes at full rate.
At full rate. Perfect. You also said that and I believe the mayor mentioned this, what happens if you stay at 2014 funds for 2015? And you use a couple of examples of taking off the Redhead run, the Westfield, or the KBM area run, and something else. Unfortunately, these are all in the outlying areas, and I believe if things go the way they're going, the outlying areas are going to get hit very bad by this new service. But at that time I asked you if you, instead of taking that runoff, because at the same time you said Grand Bay was facing difficulty with their ridership. So I suggested, and you said you never thought of it at the time, that you get the Grand Bay run to come in through.
There are some ways of service coming in direct now, but we have talked to Grand Bay about changing the arrangement out there, that in fact the bus would no longer come to the highway, but in fact it would just leave from the, and not cover as much of Grand Bay. I shouldn't say I talked to the council, but I talked to one of the councillors about it, who sort of looks after their transportation for them, that would originate there, and they would pay some amount of money to bring it from there to the block area, and then from there on it would just be the regular Marathon bus. The problem is I don't think they pay a portion to subsidize the Marathon portion. And any time we have a service that's long distance with low ridership, it is very expensive to provide it. In our efforts for coverage, that was one of the things we were doing. But I think that, it's something that we're certainly going to have to look very seriously at, whether we're going to provide that kind of coverage.
No, and maybe they want to opt out of it, but in the meantime, rather than my way of thinking, and I'm not in transit, but my way of thinking is if they're having difficulty, and we're having difficulty, and instead of taking that run off, why can't we merge two of them and maybe make everybody happy? So I'm glad to hear that you're talking some to them. So, in May, you were 30K short a month. So, I guess your worship has already answered that. You're asking. The other thing, I guess, is just a general. I've always heard of the fact that tell us what type of service you want, and same way when I was a young fellow. A few times my father ever gave me money, it was the only time it was to buy Christmas presents for mom and the rest of the brothers and sisters. And he didn't ask me what I was going to buy and give me the amount. He gave me the amount and make sure you get your mother and everybody else. So, you know, I had to go around and figure out what I was going to buy with those and disperse it that way. And I think his worship has said it, is the fact that you fellows are given the amount and tell us what type of service you're going to give us and have the proper costing for it. And if we like or dislike it, that's up to council to give the funds more or less off. So I'm glad of that.
I don't think there's what I got was. I think that we're to design what we believe is appropriate for the funds we're getting and put it in rather than come back.
Yeah. And if you come back with what I get out of Frank, maybe I'm totally wrong, but if you come back with the number. Or the fact that we want the Westfield roof still in place, the radiant roof still in place. And then you say, well, okay. Because hopefully when you come back, we give you your check. And hopefully you say, okay, this is what I can afford to spend it on. And you give us a heads up on what's going to be delivered and what's not going to be delivered. Hopefully we can get that type of interaction.
If that's what you want, yes.
I want to just be really clear, because I don't want there to be a mixed message, because the kind of line of questioning that's happening, it's just been happening the last few minutes, is part of an indication that we've got to really be clear on our roles. And the difference is the commission informs us of what it's going to do. It's not the council deciding what the routes are going to be or what the service level is going to be. And there's a helpful discussion in a number of ways. There's an equal message for my colleagues around the council table that we cannot dictate the service that the Transit Commission provides. We cannot dictate to the commission what it's going to provide to the City of St. John. Otherwise, council, if the members of this council start dictating what routes Mr. McCary and his board are going to provide, then, colleagues, we're the ones responsible for the blown budget. We have to be really clear that we cannot dictate to Mr. McCary and his commission. So when they come in, certainly they're professionals, they're collegial, they're going to tell us what their plans are, we're going to give them feedback. Because we're going to base that feedback on what we've heard from the community. But the decision is theirs. We'll give them feedback, and they may choose to accept, reject, ignore that feedback. But I just want to make sure that we understand the difference between, and I think we're good here, that the commission is going to inform, but it's not the council deciding on what the service is going to be provided. The subject matter expertise rests with Mr. McCary, his professional staff, and the members of that commission.
And I agree with that, Your Worship. And what I'm saying is that if they're doing something different than what's being done now, because when you give them that check, if they decided to go out and do whatever, because, you know, they're the professionals, then I hope they, like you just said, they communicate with us and let us know what's being done different. I think that's all they said.
And that's something that Mr. McCary, in my experience, you've been very good at, telling us what the changes are. And I expect that will continue.
That's all I'm asking for, Frank, as well. So.
Councillor Lowe?
Yeah, Frank, like from this, we found out about this $1.9 million the other day upstairs, but if the $1.9 million wasn't around, 211, we'd be talking about today, would be 211. 212, 13, 14, because that's where it hit.
That's the right. Fan. It's what's going on today.
It's been done in 211. Okay, that's number one. Your Worship, like, I understand exactly what you said, and I've got some questions for the commission. Can I ask the gentleman?
Yes,
Councilor.
Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
And I understand the way things should go.
Worship, I should point out, I'm the vice chair. I chair the meetings. Councilor Reardon is the chairperson of the commission. So, with that,
I'll talk to the vice.
Yes, please.
I'll talk to the vice.
Okay.
Have you people ever thought of running it like a business? I.e., you know, like, I know a little bit about transportation on a much smaller scale, right? But, you know, I see buses coming in here from Truro, from Moncton, from HMS, from St. Andrews, and taking passengers, mostly from the tour ships, and doing the St. Andrews, and they're all making money. Now, I'm not talking about local people, and I understand maybe because I think council give a direction once that we don't interfere with local people. But these are people from outside, i.e. the province.
Yes.
You see the pink 7 and 8 pink buses from Halifax, and that money goes back to Halifax, Nova Scotia. And from looking at what goes on here, we should, I think anyways, the commissioner should be trying to run the bus service as a business. And there's all kinds of work for you. And maybe, we should have a bus that's a nice bus. A nicer bus. I'm trying to say it nicely for you, right? A nicer bus. Where people, and there are 56 passengers, Frank, aren't they the normal size? To go to Boston and stuff.
That's correct.
You know, to go to Boston and do the runs that are out there. All these companies are making money.
If I may, Councilor, Your Worship. We're restricted in our motor vehicle license or motor carrier board license from the province. We're not permitted to have highway coaches in the sense that you're talking about $600,000 or $700,000 coach with bathroom and air conditioning. We're not allowed. We can operate a city transit coach. Second thing, the tour operators tell us they want a coach with air conditioning and fancy seating and not a transit type of coach. Our buses are busy in the morning and at supper time. We do have coaches available from 10 o'clock approximately until about 2 o'clock during the day. I can give you a specific example. I'm in the tour business, tour guiding. This summer I had a company from Halifax. They had to pay the port of St. John $5 per person for every passenger they picked up because their bus was not, I don't know what, it cost them 247 times 5.
One,
they had to pay the port of St. John. So,
Councillor Lowe has a good point in this way. I mean, maybe there's an opportunity, for example, for the Transit Commission to establish a separate arm's length business unit that invests, if there's a business case to do it, in a bus company that. And that bus company pays dividends to the Transit Commission. I think Councilor was on to something here.
Okay. But you can get those licenses.
Yes.
All you have to do is apply for them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm aware of that. But your bus can go to St. Andrews.
We have several buses.
Your bus can go to St. Martin's.
Motor carrier license.
Pardon, Frank?
With the motor carrier.
Oh,
wait, some of our buses are licensed, not just the motor, the license plate. You need a separate, as you know, a little sticker that says you can go out of town. Yes, we have buses, obviously, that go to Hampton, Grand Bay, outside the parameters of the city. Our buses could go to St. Martin's, to St. Andrews. To ride a transit bus to St. Andrews is a little...
That's why I said it would be nicer. If we could get something nicer when we're buying, like Frank's talking about looking at these buses that are starting to use in D.C., right? They're building them in Quebec, different buses now too, Frank, right?
If I can just get Mr. McCary to come to the podium and speak just for the purpose of recording the session.
Those buses I've talked, they are transit, you know, they're designed for transit. I mean, if you want to get into the highway coach business, you really need a washroom, air conditioning, which we don't run in St. John, we don't really need it. So it would be a challenge for us to try to develop that business. We do a fair bit of charter work. I mean, the ships, you know, I'm generating probably 100 passengers a day every time the ships come in at $20 a head, U.S., most of it. So we generate a fair bit of revenue.
I'm definitely not being critical, right? I'm saying I do believe there's a lot of work out there that if we look for it hard enough, we can get it, and by that we can cut down the losses that we're having, that's all. I mean, and I know it's a whole different ball game, and I know it's...
Look, it's out of business, I don't understand, because I worked for the, you know, for the Irving interests running charter operations for 8 years, so I mean, it's a business I know, but it's a tough business, and,
yep.
You know, it's you've got to get ICC licensing if you're going to the States, and big insurance implications.
And I'm well aware of what the port wants every time you put wheels on top of their property, right? But what all I'm thinking is that I think the time has come because you've shown in the ridership how it's decreased. And we all know that the times are tough here in New Brunswick and in St. John, right? And maybe this is some way we can get outside the box and make some money. And whether, like the mayor said, we can have a little company on the other side that's still part of you guys, right? I think there's money to be made out there in the transportation field that can be run under you and the commission. That's all I'm saying. Thank you. Thank you, Councilor.
Thank you, Your Worship. Thank you, Mr. McCary. I guess part of this conversation for me is rebuilding that trust with the commission as well. So a lot of the questions have been asked and great questions that certainly most of them I haven't even thought of. But I guess thinking beyond the proverbial fare box, if you will, how do we currently track ridership trends right now?
We basically do it through fare for accounts, you know, like manual accounts. There's some transit systems that have very accurate information about ridership, and it's all done on fare box systems. In other words, every person who gets on goes by the fare box. If it's a monthly pass, they have one that they will register with it. You know, cash fares will register that the passenger went off. It's even tell us to stop, etc. But the investment's almost $30,000 a bus to have that type of technology. And I don't know that the payback would be out there in the long run for the information. I mean, we have pretty good general information, just not very specific information. Now, we have a few buses that have a bar that the passenger, when he goes by, it breaks the bar. When they leave, it breaks the bar. They're not perfect. I mean, when we put one of those out and check it, it'll always come back to the grade with 15 people on it, when in fact there's nobody on it. But it does give us some idea. And it can be tracked by different locations. So when we're interested in what's going on our route, we will do that. If we can spare the manpower, we'll even put somebody on. We're a little... Not particularly confident in driver counts because we know the driver gets distracted. I mean, particularly if it's a busy run at a certain time, and he's trying to handle, you know, various fair media, etc. I'm sure that he looks after them. I guess maybe 10 get on there. If it's a low ride, low usage run, the driver may say, geez, it might be thinking, well, cut this, I better beef the counts up a little bit. So we try to do it other ways. So we can, you know, if we look at a particular route, we try to find something out, we can usually get the information by manual means, effectively, and also using these bar counting buses. We do, like St. John's, Newfoundland has a very sophisticated fare box system. We use a lot of their information to make assumptions. For example, the TransCards, we know they have 49.6 rides per monthly, not TransCards, but per monthly pass. That's what we assume the rides are taken for monthly passes is what we use 50. And that's kind of an industry standard because most transit systems, in fact, are doing the same sort of thing as we are, even big systems like Toronto, because they have not invested in the fare box technology yet. But part of the problem with the fare box technology, too, is nobody's sure where it's going in terms of, you know, it's still a cash business, like 30% of our stuff is still cash. Nobody really wants the cash around. We would prefer to see us getting into debit cards or that sort of thing. They're all very tough because the bus environment is very difficult. And one of the things we have to face with if we start going down that road is we've got to be prepared to have the maintenance staff to support the system to keep it working. But, you know, these would all be things that would give very, very accurate information as to where your riders are getting on, how many are on every road. What we're doing now is we're just doing samples all the time, but this would be a continuous, update of actual numbers.
Thanks for that, Mr. McCary. I guess, and obviously it's not my job to interfere with how commission runs, but I guess just speaking from my council perspective, that type of evidence-based decision making is really good.
Yes.
And it would be best practice. So I would continually urge the commission to look for mechanisms beyond manual counts and bar counters towards a more sophisticated
yes.
system that can track ridership trends that allow you to make better informed choices, not only on routes, but where our public transportation system is going down the road. So, secondly, I guess I'm just looking at this. I know that the mayor has talked about some innovation beyond our borders, and one of the things that seems to be popular in other jurisdictions is perhaps public-private partnerships, whether it's with industry to sponsor buses that run on natural gas, for example, by the natural gas industry that would purchase those buses, or whether it was by other companies that would purchase electric buses that they're now using, I believe, on almost a full-scale basis in places like Manitoba. Their electric buses are now on.
I think diesel electric is.
If that's what they are, and I guess the message I'm getting from those jurisdictions is, diesel is a dead man walking, so they're looking for other alternatives to go ahead and do that. And they partnered with business to make that happen beyond just partnering with the city taxpayer to make a service occur. Has the commission talked about? You brought those ideas to the commission.
We've talked with the natural gas people, but the issue has always been the fueling station that you have to develop, which is a cost of about $1 million. We've made it quite clear that if people are prepared to put a fueling station in like that, because the cost of a natural gas bus is not that much more, and it certainly is a cleaner burn, and it's very efficient. But it's getting that fueling station in. I mean, obviously, to put $1 million fueling station in and start to convert your fleet is difficult to justify. And one of the problems with natural gas and the huge, so transit based on, is the huge validity of the price.
And I understand that. I guess I don't want to hone in specifically on just natural gas, but just the.
Well, diesel electric is the other one.
Is it right?
I truly believe diesel electric was the place where buses and trucks were going to go.
And those things are great. And even beyond that, I guess really just speaking from a global perspective, I guess I just want to encourage the commission to think about public-private partnerships that may even go beyond that to help support this system. It doesn't necessarily have to be diesel electric. It doesn't have to be natural gas. It could be any sort of public-private partnership that has a win-win, both for a public transportation system that continually needs funding from not only taxpayers, but can also benefit business in a win-win relationship. And you do mention that the diesel and the electric hybrid in Manitoba right now. They're saying they're saving $100,000 over a 12-year lifespan on those buses, even though the buses may cost 40% more. And I guess those types of innovative strategies, I'd like to hear that conversation coming more from the commission table and talking about all kinds of things beyond those two things, but the other innovative strategies that they're looking at in other jurisdictions. We can adopt those. The solutions are out there. And we can bring those here. They're portable.
We're tracking these electrics very closely. The cost has started to come down on them. Initially they were about $200,000 for a bus. It's not that much anymore. It's been disappointing, the results they've got. Transit should be an application that they said should deliver a 30% fuel saving. It's coming in more at 5 or 8%. So the numbers aren't there yet, to make the conversion to that type of technology. Diesel electric is a challenge also because it's very 600 volt voltage, so you need to get into the electricians that way.
Thank you to you and the commission members for being here and starting that that pathway towards rebuilding my trust as a councillor on around this issue. Thank you, Your Worship.
Thank you.
Councilman.
Thank you, Your Worship. Well, Frank, one of the things we'll be on the end of the list is most of the questions and answers. When was the last time you increased fares for public transit?
It's quite a while ago. It's, I believe it would be
2011.
Say 3 years now. I think it's 4 now. I think this will be 4 starting next year. I think it was 2011.
And when do you plan on taking or evening increase?
It's not something we brought to the commission. Concerned being that in the time of declining ridership, we're concerned that the fare increases might be quite counterproductive. Well, in terms of they drive more riders.
Well,
they don't necessarily drive riders away, but they reduce frequency, particularly for, you know, non-working users.
Okay.
They take the bus a lot.
But we just heard that you went to the school board and charged the full fares. So what was the increase there?
But there was no increase because they caught the number of students. We're seeing about the same revenue as we saw before.
But they're not getting any passengers.
Well, what they're doing is they're buying monthly passes now. And it used to be that on the last contract, I think they were delivering about 1,100 passengers. That was what we were getting out of them every month.
Yeah.
We're down now to 850. So the revenue per year is the same, but there's less people. But unfortunately, the monthly pass, the other pass is restricted to go between school hours to and from school. The monthly pass they can use any time, so they can even use it on the weekends and whatnot.
So at the end of the day, we're probably getting just as many riders, only it's the same riders, it's not.
Well, what's happening, I think, is that we're getting less rides, but the bus capacity being used, but it's being used at the time, obviously, you know, they're using it on the weekends when there's room on the bus, or they're using it in the evening when there's room on the bus anyway, so it doesn't really matter to us. And then the issue is going away in terms of what we're charging the full fare now, which is a question that they're not buying, they're not giving them to as many as people as they used to get the other passes.
Okay.
The revenue looks like it's a good deal. The first month it was up, this is the last. But we think we're going to have a benefit in months like December and March, because before they wouldn't be paying for the week of March break, or they wouldn't be paying for the weeks of Christmas holidays.
Right.
Now they buy the monthly pass, they'll pay full fare, so we suspect we're going to get a good couple of those ones.
Okay, so you have fewer people with passes, but they're using them more often.
Well, we're not sure of that, but we have fewer people with passes, but they're paying more for the passes.
Okay. All right, let's move on then. The idea of having a bus go to a bus stop close to a school and taking kids out on school, you know, for class trips, have we looked at that? That was something we talked about back in May.
We're getting charters now from schools.
Are we?
Apparently, it's working out for some reason. They're not able to get the yellow buses, or it's cheaper to take buses. We're getting some of that. We don't know why, but it's cheaper. Typically, they used to get the yellow buses and keep them from them, but we're getting some now for our buses. And it's, you know, it's good business because it's just having to keep.
Exactly. You know, students will go to the bus stop and get on that bus. You don't have to go to the school.
Right.
And that gives them the experience of driving on the school.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. You're talking about the idea of going to schools and having to take the bus from a bus stop, just a regular bus.
Like I did last year.
Right.
Right. Last
year. Yes, yes.
Are we doing that?
I have to follow up on that. No.
That would be a good idea if you did. Because I think, and you just said it, you're going to find that your buses are going to get a lot of business because it is expensive as a yellow bus.
Right.
Okay. I guess everything else has been pretty much answered, Your Worship. I guess I was going to ask you why you cut the route back in 2012, but I guess at that point in time you were listening to the wrong group, as the mayor pointed out. You got to start listening to the commission, I guess.
Well,
so that's a good thing. I mean, that's fine. I did have that on there, but I think the mayor more or less answered it for me in the policy governance structure. So for that, I thank you. Thank you all for coming.
Councillor Boyd.
Thank you, Your Worship. I guess I'm the last one.
You're not quite the last.
I'm not quite the last one. Okay, I had about 37 questions when I got in here. I added about 3, which came up to about 40. About 3 got answered, so I'm still at 37. It's after the time that we promised we were going to be done tonight, so I'm not going to ask them. I'm just going to ask a very, very few, and I'm going to ask you to keep the answer as short as you possibly can. At first, I'd like to say that the reason that I'm not going to ask these 40 questions or 37 questions that I have left is that I know I can phone you anytime, and you will talk to me, and you will answer those questions. And I have a great confidence in that. And if a citizen emails me and asks me something about transit, I have a great confidence that I can send you that email and say, Frank, would you mind dealing with this? And you always do it. And I want to thank you for that, because it's important to me to give the citizens the answers that they require. So thank you for that. I'd like to thank you guys for coming here tonight, because this wasn't your funnest night you've ever had on the Transit Commission. And there are some of you that are here tonight that I know really well, such as Donna, who I work with every week, John and Charles, other people I don't know as well, Mr. Smith. But you've all been here, and you've all had as good an attitude as possible to have under the circumstances, and I think we have too. All relationships aren't all milk and honey, and this wasn't a milk and honey night. And I may be a bit of an optimist, but I feel like a new understanding has been reached tonight whereby the Transit Commission has all of a sudden grown up, bulked up, and taken on responsibility in a different way, I think, than they ever had before. I think perhaps tonight we may have set you free to perhaps do what you always wanted to do, to go and look for new business, to know that we're going to give you some money, but we're not going to tell you how to spend it. You're going to figure that out, because if a citizen writes to us and says, why is such and such a route cut? We didn't cut a route. Why isn't the bus coming at 7 o'clock to such and such a place? That's not our business. It's our business to provide you with some money. And as Councillor Reardon says, I'm all about the money. Most of my 37 questions here are almost in the minutia level, but I feel that when things are as difficult as they are right now, that's when I get down into the weeds. That's when I go looking for the answers to the minutia, because it helps me to understand where we are and how we got there. So I feel that I know the answer to this question, Frank, but I'd like you to tell me, again, in as short a period as you can, because I want to get everybody out of here. When you look on that page that you have right up there, on the line that's written in red, cost to the city, the figures there are 4.9, 5.2, 4.5, 5.2, and 5.7. My question is, are all of those first figures, not the 2014, but the first four, how much we gave you plus, how much we gave you at the outset, plus how much we had to bulk you up after?
Yes.
Okay. But the one for 2014, is that how much we gave you at the outset, but it doesn't count how much we're going to have to give you before the end of the year?
That's the 5.159 is, well, what you gave
okay,
us
wait, I don't see a 5.159. I'm on the 5.787. That's the one I want to ask.
No.
Oh, okay, the subsidy, okay.
Yeah, the 5.159, but it was budgeted 5.159 plus 178,000 of equity.
Okay. So,
I mean, the number we're using is 5339.
Okay, so every year we sort of play a game with you, and you play a game with us. We give you a certain amount of money, but then we say, oh, well, if you don't quite make it, we're going to give you up to 175 more. Rather than just being honest at the outset and say, okay, well, we're going to give you whatever it is plus 175. Is that
well, no, it was a plan to reduce the equity, because it didn't make any sense to take that risk. A large equity, but it was a plan to reduce the equity over a period of time.
Yeah, from the building.
Right.
Okay, I understand that. But my point is about, you said, well, you know, it's what you gave us plus $175,000 every year. How much of it you had to take based on how much equity you could use? That's not my question. My question is how much, and I'm trying to get this out clearly so I can really get it. How much for instance, in 2014, cost to city, okay, let's go to the cost to city, not subsidy, but cost to city.
That is what the cost would be.
That's what it will be if we give you 800,000 right here quick, or if we give you 600, or if we give you 400, because we've heard all these other figures, and I don't know what make up that figure, because I don't know what the overrun is going to be, because I've heard all these other numbers. So is that as it is now, or as it is after we add on this amount more?
What we're projecting will need from the city is $5,787,000.
Okay, good. Okay. I think that about covers it, except for two other questions. I was happy to receive your St. John Transit Commission Act. Now, this is a rather old document. It's from 1979, and it starts off with two prayers, and I think we could take all the prayers we could get in this particular situation. But all that being said, in this document, it tells who can do what and who has to do what. And one of the things that it says is that council, with the approval of council, anybody that council designates can look at your statements anytime they have you well want. So my question is, would you mind going forward sending us, first of all, a copy of this nice thing, because I like to look things over with a calculator in my hand, and would you mind sending us a copy of your finished financial statements for the last 5 years? Just for those of us who really like to get down to the numbers, would it be...
You mean our annual statements?
Yeah, your finished statements. I've got a lot of other questions. I've got a lot of suggestions for you, but due to the hour of the night, I'm just going to say thank you very much, and I'll give you a shout sometime, and I fully expect that you won't tell me to mind my own business, but you'll tell me anything I want to know. So on that note, I'll say thank you again very much, and I'm sorry that this has been such a hard night for so many people, because I know that many of you are volunteers, and you put a lot of time into this, and it's very discouraging when things don't go right, but when they don't go right, you've got to fix them, so thank you.
And last but never least, that's my third.
Well, you probably won't want to hear what I have to say, but I've been sitting here listening to everything. I agree with all of them. I know the commission has to do the job. But we deal with taxpayers' money, so we're giving you a lump sum of money. The commission makes the decision. But does the city have any... If we can't... We're not making decisions for you, then does the city have any authority? Because I guess what I'm trying to say is that every decision that your commission makes, right, comes back to us, because we're the public voice for the city. So if you cut lots of roots, and I don't have any say in that, that's fine. But then I'm going to take the flak for it. So, and if any decision that your commission makes, so I wonder if the city, because in the St. John Transit Act, there's nothing in there that says the city has any authority. And I guess I'm questioning myself. I'm saying, well, if the commission makes the wrong decisions, or I don't like the routes they make and all that, and the people come back and complain to me, and I've just given you several millions of dollars, I guess that I have to ask the question, where does that leave all of
it? And Councilor Mackler, you touched on the thing that we have to, as a council, understand. And it's this is why this is helpful for all of us, not just, it's helpful for me, it's helpful for the council members, it's helpful for the commission. It goes back to what I mentioned a minute ago. Council can't dictate the service that commission provides. Otherwise, we're going to be responsible for the world budgets. And at the same time, we have to have confidence and faith that Mr. Smith, that Frank, that John Campbell, that our council rep, Donna Reardon, that they understand the decisions they're making reflect on us. The decisions of all of our commissions reflect on this council. The decision made earlier this year about eliminating passes for provisionally impaired in St. John. Well, I'm sure that every single council member heard about that and got comments directed to them. but we didn't interfere in that because that's a decision of the commission. As soon as we start to interfere in any way and try to dictate, and I see members of the union here tonight, the trans union, if they would advocate their interests to members of this council. And as soon as we start listening and taking their advocacy and then trying to pressure the transit commission in a certain direction, then we're interfering. We set the budget, and that's the end of our involvement. Our role is to set the budget, and we want to have that conversation. We want to be informed about what's going on, but council can't decide the service, and we can't be interfering. And that's been a mistake of previous councils of muddling in the business of a commission like this, of trying to impose our role as a council on this independent arms length body. And as a result, its strength and its independence, I would say, has been stunted to some extent. We've got capable people. I know that Mr. Campbell, John Campbell, ran a military transportation system that transported many thousands of times more people, equipment, and resources than our St. John Transit system does over many, many years. So I know we've got people who are capable and able to give good. We've appointed good people, we've appointed capable people. We've got Mr. McCary, who's been in the industry, private and public, for decades. So we as council, we want to have the dialogue that we want to have with every commission about how things are being provided. But it's about information sharing. It's not about us giving direction. I think that's the real. That's all of us have to share that growing experience. Deputy.
I guess the only thing that I would say is that for me, it's like the service-based budgeting. I need to have information from the commission to understand how much it costs to run a service, so that we're not just going to pick a number out of the air, right? So we have an idea of what it costs to run a transit system, but then we have to weigh how much we have to allocate to it.
Mr. Harriet, you'll be shocked, but I don't have any other questions on for you today. And I'll echo Councillor Fullerton's gratitude to you and all the members of the commission. We're very grateful for the time you've taken tonight. We've come over time, and we thank you for your candor, and we thank you for your endurance on working with us. We're building together a great city, and we're certainly a vital part of that. So thank you very much for that, myself and the entire council. Thank you. Council, can I get a motion to adjourn?
Oh,
certainly, Councilor Reid, if you want to.
Well, I was just going to mention a couple of brief things, and it's only sort of a little bit of food for thought. I asked those numbers to be extended back to 2005, and I have those, and it's all the same. The history is the same. The act says that the legal reason is the budget. So I think historically that's always been the key, and for us, we just sort of gone along on that same. Now that we're clear, and a literacy program, I think that's the two that we're running. We extend the free bus over to the Washington Memorial. The YMCA wants to know, hope that their students on the yellow box is going under classes, and to get them to the new Y, Sculptor St. John at college in the summer. We get a lot of that, those sorts of requests. Our revenues are a little bit even more difficult to predict because of the change with the school system. With the school system buying monthly, so we won't know. We can predict it, but month to month it'll be whatever it will be. Whereas before we had a charter, then we had it for the whole year. If they're going to buy month to month passes, the deputy says, can we maybe look at not taking students? But they say, have a month to have purchased at full price. You can't say, can't get on the bus. Cost to offer the service, we can get that down to the penny. It's just coming back with the revenue that we have a little bit of difficulty with. When I, as a counselor, not as a counselor, when I went around as Donna Reardon and I was running for council, I heard in Ward 3, I heard a lot from people that want support for the bus, and I said I would try to work as hard as I could to support the bus and transit system in St. John. I represent three priority neighborhoods, and I know Ward 2 has a priority neighborhood, so, and they
maybe all the counselors didn't hear that. I don't know, but I did hear it, and so that's another guess. It's another monkey wrench in the whole plan as well. The other thing is I've got a copy of it here. On June the 11th of 13, I had a motion on for upstairs that we discuss the whole idea of transit and competing with private industry. And we could go back and check it out, but I thought I was clear that, and maybe it wasn't council's decision. The mayor may be right about that too, with that decision that I thought that council said he didn't want the bus system, transit system competing with private industry because it was a publicly subsidized entity. So that, of course, changes the water on the beans there too for us, because if council doesn't want to suggest that and suggest that we go out and look for business ourselves, and we can certainly do that. And Councillor McAlery is right. It does come back to the council. It's just the nature of the beast. You will get those requests or whatever, and you'll just have to send them on to us, and we'll deal with them as the best we can. So thank you very much for your time tonight. I think we did clear up a lot of questions, and I will say that on our committee, ex officio is Mr. Yeomans, Mr. Woods, and Jacqueline Hamilton Planning are all ex officio of the Transit Commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Council, very, very much. May I have a motion to adjourn, Council?
So moved.